We're very happy to be here and having all the listeners tuning in. This is going to be exciting, right, Allison?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So to get started, Allison and I had the opportunity to talk to CITR's former members, Morgan Yee and Brenda Grano. Brenda was the the manager, stage manager for 8 years, and Access Day actually started with CITR and then slowly got around broadcasting with Canada, across Canada radio campus stations. So we had the opportunity to talk to them. This is Brenda Grano and Morgan Yee, as well as
Jules. Yeah. Our lovely Jules. Jules Andre Brown.
Yeah, so we hope you enjoy this mini interview with them.
Can you tell us who you are and a little about yourself?
Sure. My name's Brenda Grano, and I used to work at CITR for 8 years. I was the station manager. I loved working in radio. I loved community radio and saw the station sort of evolve over a period of time.
And now what do you do?
Now I work at Creative BC, and I manage a set of funding programs to support BC's music industry.
That's awesome. I'm sure you're doing a wonderful job over there. But yeah, you're missed here too. Do you remember how the accessibility committee was started? Not the collective, but the committee.
Yes. So Hugo and I were talking about ways to improve access to the airwaves and create space for different people to make radio. And, you know, it was grant writing time, so we were trying to think of, you know, great ideas. We could apply for some money to move things forward and provide support for different people. Thought, you know, let's improve our spoken word and get more people on the radio. So we applied for 3 coordinator positions, for an accessibility coordinator, Indigenous coordinator, and, oh boy, there was a third one. And I can't even remember.
The gender empowerment?
Oh, yeah, the Women's Collective, which changed names to the Gender Empowerment Collective.
Yeah.
So we created these 3 positions, but it was really important that we had committees of people interested in doing this and participating and being on the radio. Luckily, you were around, and we walked down the hallway. And
like that day, you asked, but Hugo asked, and he was a volunteer manager for those of the listeners who don't know him. And then Morgan asked, so I was asked by 3 different people that day on the same day, which was really funny. So what was your thought about Access Day when the committee decided that they wanted, you know, Access Day, you know, a radio talking about accessibility?
I thought it was a fantastic idea. And, you know, CITR has so many other different sort of annual events for different types of programming that this was a great addition.
Why do you think Access Day is so important?
I think most people don't understand the challenges different people face every day. And I think that kind of education and awareness is so important, and we all deal with our, you know, we all deal with our own minds and bodies, and we're all so different, and we all experience challenges in different ways. But I think Access Day is such a great way to educate and create awareness.
And before we let you off, is there anything that you'd like to add or say to our listeners? Because this is not just CITR, is across Canada as well.
Oh, great. Well, I'm so glad this has become a national thing. I think that's amazing and so important, and I'm so glad that this little germ of an idea that happened at CITR is still going.
Thanks, Brenda. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brenda.
No problems. You're all doing such great work.
Thank you.
So nice to talk to you again.
Yeah.
Who are you?
I am Jules Andre Brown.
And
What do you do?
I do a radio show at CITR 101.9 FM, and I'm the chair of the board at CITR 101.9 FM / Discorder Radio, and just love radio.
Yeah? And you're part of Spectrum.
Yeah, and I work at the Spectrum Society for Community Living. And I've worked here for, I think, 14 years. Pretty well. And we're here at the Spectrum Society office in Kingsway. Lovely Joyce Collingwood Kingsway.
That's a nice area.
I love it. I love it.
Do you remember how you got asked to join the CITR Accessibility Committee? Or?
Yeah, I do. A few of the early members were, well, there was a few disability radio shows around town on different radio stations, and CITR was thinking that they would love to have their own show and then also do an access day. So I got involved as the collectives were getting started and gave some advice and sort of support to the early start and helped people just. I more was just encouraging than really anything. It was just like, you can do it. CITR is super cool. They're going to be really supportive. Let's just go up there. Mm-hmm. You got this. And, you know, people really took it from there. And the volunteer coordinator at the time was really helpful. That was Eleanor. And she was super great. And so was the rest of the CITR staff at that time. So
you were kind of the person who started the accessibility. What was your initial thought about starting an access day?
Yeah, there had been one of the hosts had told me about access days happening in other venues, like online. Like there's a Twitter access day, and thought it would be a good idea to do a radio access day. And it wasn't my idea, but I thought it was really great. And I had some radio that I'd been working on, like small pieces that I was like, oh, I'd like to share some more stuff on disability. So I had a bit of content ready, and I was like, that would be a great place to do it. So I was excited. And there were a bunch of organizations I was kind of informally on their advisory councils, like In Common TV, where I thought they were doing really great work helping people record their stories and narratives. And I was like, you know, there's a bunch of great work happening all over. It'd be kind of cool to bring those people together. So Access Day kind of came because there's so many people, and the Accessibility Committee came because there's so many people doing great work about broadcasting, about the experience of their lives and just people with disabilities, that I was just kind of there pulling a little bit of strings and introducing people to one another. So.
What was your favorite moment about doing Access Day?
I think I remember DP, who's one of the hosts. A lot of my favorite memories are of her. Just her getting really excited to go on and interview the Rick Hansen Foundation. That was really cool to watch her just really come alive and interview people. I think the excitement leading up to it was really cool, just to see, you know, people be nervous about pulling off this full day of broadcasting and then, you know, pull it off was really cool. And then the thing that enriches me about it now is that there's so many friendships bore out of this collective or this group that maintains even after some of the people who started it have moved on or they're doing different things. So it's cool. I think even this interview now is an example where, you know, that you're now a big part of that project. So it's super cool to have people I've never met be a part of this and sort of be like, hey, we're running Access Day and doing all kinds of great content. So
yeah.
that makes me feel so great.
Would you like to add anything for our listeners at CITR and across Canada?
Across Canada, that's exciting. I didn't know that it was going across Canada, so that's really exciting. I think, just all community radio is great. Keep doing it. Access Day is incredible. There's so many people doing really phenomenal work on across not just Canada, but abroad. So if you ever want any advice around people who've been doing some good stuff, I'm happy to give some recommendations. But I think for people that are listening, check out Lydia Brown. She's a really cool person. I forgot which university she's working out of, but she's doing just some amazing. They have opened up my mind on disability work, and I would firmly recommend Lydia's work. So yeah, check that out.
Cool.
Yeah.
Can you tell us who you are and a little bit about yourself?
So my name is Morgan Yee, and I used to be a student at the University of British Columbia. I studied in the General Arts Program and also in the School of Social Work. And I was involved with CITR for the 4 years that I was at school. I participated with the news team as the news director for a couple years and did a couple of radio documentaries with DP.
Yeah.
And it was great. I loved it.
Do you remember how you got asked to join CITR's accessibility committee?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about it, and I couldn't remember the exact circumstances, but I know that it was brought forward to yourself and IDB.
Yeah.
That they were wanting to have a committee, and we just finished working on, if I'm remembering correctly, it was our We Are All Equal project.
Yeah.
And so that was right up our alley.
Yep.
And so we agreed that, yes, we thought that that would be a great idea for the station.
What was your initial thought about starting an access day?
So I thought that was a really good idea. Like, me and DP had spent a lot of time working on content that was about accessibility, and I felt that there was a lack of that kind of content at the station at that time. So I was really excited about doing a project where we would have, I think it was only 6 hours when we started.
Yeah.
But having, you know, a chunk of the day be committed to just talking about accessibility issues, people of different abilities, and also looking at, I think it was that year that we had a couple different musical agencies.
Mm-hmm.
That were also participating to talk about how they were bringing music to the accessibility community.
What was your favorite moment of doing Access Day? I know you've only done once, but I mean, you participated a lot in the first. So
yeah, I mean, we were there all day.
Yeah,
so I was doing the boards for, I think, if not the whole day, most of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite moment was when we were finished.
Okay.
And we'd gotten all of our content in.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was one specific moment that was my favorite, but I really enjoyed that day.
Yeah, I think for me it was because, you know, at the end where I got to do, well, I interviewed the ambassadors mm-hmm. at Rick Hansen Foundation.
Yeah, which was really cool.
Which was really cool. But us being at the old studio and then being cramped in really closely, and then it was really hot that day too, so
mm-hmm.
yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
But that was my thought, and I thought you did really, really, really good job for the first Access Day.
Well, thank you. I think everything went really well. We had a lot of support from the station.
Yeah.
You know, the tech team was great. This was, you know, this is pre-accessibility. What is it called? That? You know, this is pre-accessibility collective.
Yeah.
Right. So we were just a committee.
Yeah, we were a committee.
And so I think that was really interesting, because a lot of that time we were just like, it was really volunteer based.
Yeah, and I think,
which I thought was nice.
Yeah, and I think it really actually opened the door for the accessibility committee, because without Access Day, I don't think we would have had the
collective.
The collective.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's just nice also to see that there was a sort of like a unifying event to just rally around.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't just to just talk about accessibility. It was actually to put something on the air about it.
Right.
Would you like to add anything for our listeners at CITR and across Canada?
Why do you think that Access Day is so important?
I think it's very important to actually talk about different things on the radio, and especially with campus and community radio, when sometimes it sort of gets siloed into some very specific niches,
mm-hmm.
and making space for a whole day now, and nationwide, which is amazing, a day to talk about accessibility and accessible media, how to, you know, make sure that our campus radio stations are accessible and open to everyone,
right.
I think is huge. Like, that was a really important thing to me when I was with CITR and when I was, you know, with the news. It was just making sure that it was open to everyone.
Right.
Right? And being able to adapt your programming in small ways, right? But in ways that make it so that anyone can participate, whether it's a community member, an older person, someone with accessibility issues. Just making sure that everyone actually has access to public radio.
All right. Well said. Okay. Is there anything else you would like to add?
I don't think so. I feel like I was a little bit rambly.
Thank you, Morgan.
Thanks, Morgan.
No worries.
My name is DP. I'm a CITR volunteer community member, and I have been for 7 years. The radio thing happened because I thought it was really cool. It's just me and the mic, and that's it.
What is Access Day?
It's where we acknowledge accessibility and how we can promote accessibility, not only on radio, but in our daily life.
What is special about this year's Access Day?
It's the fifth. It's the fifth. You know, it's big. And last year we had across Canada participating. It's great to see other stations being a part of this special occasion.
On Thursday, May 16th, head to your local community radio station and tune in to Access Day 2019, anytime between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. PST.
And now you'll be listening to Morgan Yee's interview with founders of GAD, Global Accessibility Awareness Day. So here's the interview.
Joe, thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
To jump right into it, what inspired the idea for Global Accessibility Awareness Day?
Great question. Basically, I mean, I've been a developer for years and really try to understand what's going on at the forefront, what's coming around the corner of technology. And I ran into this video by Victor Tsaran, who was a programmer at Yahoo at the time. And I saw a screen reader, which is how blind folks access the web. They don't have a mouse and they don't have a screen, so a screen reader just reads out the page. And I was blown away because I'd never seen that before. And so the idea kind of percolated in my mind that developers should become more aware of it. And then later on, my father, who as he was getting older was losing his vision and his hearing, was trying to access a bank website and was having tremendous difficulty with the accessibility, and I kind of got a little upset. I wrote a blog post, and I expected nothing to come of it, but Jennison Ascension, who was an accessibility advocate at the time out of Toronto, read my blog post and said, hey, this idea for an awareness day is a great idea, let's make it happen. Of course, we never expected what kind of virality, you know, how this would take off right from the first year, but it sure has.
And that was back in 2011, that first original blog post?
Yes.
What was your experience like getting other developers and industry members involved in Global Accessibility Awareness Day?
Well, to be honest, I mean, I've kind of built a community in LA of techies, so starting something up in Los Angeles wasn't hard. I just had to put out an event, and Jennison did the same in Toronto, but it just took off by itself. I didn't have to go to extraordinary lengths. Everybody that heard about it just thought it was a great idea. And in the very first year, we had tremendous uptake, and we were already in 12 different cities. I blogged about it in November 2011. The next May, we already did set up the event, so it was pretty cool.
In your blog post, you talked about how you did feel like there was a lack of knowledge around online accessibility. Why do you think that lack of knowledge exists?
Being a developer is really hard. There's so much to know, and the technology changes underfoot constantly. And so if you haven't been exposed to being around folks that use assistive technology, you just would never know. You might hear the term accessibility, but if you're a really good developer, you're spending many, many hours being good at what you do. And it's just something that, since it doesn't affect your daily experience, you may not have really put much thought into it. I think it's just that. But once people see a demonstration of a screen reader, they just are blown away and tend to pay a lot more attention to accessibility after that.
I've never seen a screen reader before, and I'm sure lots of our listeners also haven't. Can you describe it a little bit, like what that actually means?
So imagine that you're going on to, let's say, CNN.com. When you're sighted, if you're looking at the page, you have tons of headlines, and you might have pictures as well, and your eye gets drawn to a headline of something that interests you or a picture that interests you, and then you just click it. When you're blind, you actually have to have everything read to you. So the entire page will be read to you top to bottom, the only thing that you have access to is the keyboard where you can move up and down the headline, right? And also the pictures, if you have to bother to create an alt text, it'll read it out. So you would have to read all those headlines and just tab or use the arrow to go up and down on each of these headlines. And then once you like one, you hit enter and you're going into the page. It's all hearing and keyboard. And it's super fast. It's really interesting. If you watch a blind person use a screen reader, the speed is phenomenal. You just wouldn't believe it. And I think there's a term, I think it's called like sighted speed, for how sighted folks will listen to a screen reader much slower.
What else makes a website accessible?
There's a lot to it, and I'm certainly not the greatest expert. However, what I would say is that if you try not to make things overly fancy and you stick with semantics, you're going to find yourself having a much more accessible site. Testing it also is really important. If you test it with just a keyboard, you know, you will find that you're doing a much better job of making it accessible. I don't think there's just any one thing that I can say that will do it.
So, in your opinion, why is the development of accessible technology so important in the modern world?
Imagine if you have certain disabilities, they might completely knock you out of being able to do certain activities. And the internet and the apps that are out now have really changed the world for a lot of people. But imagine that if you can't get around, you can't drive on your own, and you need a driver to bring you somewhere, and you take something like Uber. If Uber or Lyft is accessible, then you're able to get around, you're able to be mobile and have your own freedom in a way that you can't if these things become inaccessible to you. And it's not only about being blind. There's lots of different kind of assistive technology. There are puff devices where people that have difficulty using their hands and can't use a mouse have this a puff and sip device that they can manipulate with their mouth and with their nose. And if you make it inaccessible, they just can't get to your site. There's also some interesting statistics that there's about 57 million people in the U.S. that are disabled, 1 billion worldwide, and, you know, those are huge numbers, and about 200 billion in disposable income. Gartner claims that worldwide it's in the trillions, and so that's a lot of income that, from a selfish reason, if you're not making your site accessible, you're locking yourself out to tremendous potential. And I'll add one more thing. With the baby boom generation getting older, as you get older, you lose a lot of your physical abilities, and that includes hearing and eyesight, among other things.
Now, the stuff that you've been working on through GAD, is that solely web-based, or do you guys also look at other platforms, looking at how you can code for that?
Let's say digital accessibility relates more than just web. It absolutely relates to iPads and tablets and phones, mobile phones, any kind of digital technology you should make accessible. And it comes down to user testing. You know, one very simple example is a lot of people will try and use the excuse of saying that it costs a lot to make it accessible. But in fact, if you pay attention to making your product accessible, and a synonym of accessibility is usability, you will find that you'll have a much better product. And a very simple example is Apple is a very big champion of accessibility. In some presentations, I show frogs, cats, babies, all kind of people interacting with the iPad with delight because it's extremely usable. And by starting with accessibility, Apple has made much, much better products. And you will see that they're extremely active in the accessibility community.
Since your original blog post, have you seen any changes in the ways that developers create content?
There's still lots of folks that are unaware. It's still an early movement, and it needs to get more steeped in. But I've definitely seen a lot of changes. I never publicly mentioned the name of the bank that my dad had issues with, but by the third year, we got an email from them that they're running an internal event. They asked us not to publish their name, but that they know that their accessibility is an issue and they're trying to improve it and they're working on it internally. So it came full circle. And to this day, I've never told them that it was their website that prompted this to happen. So I can definitely say that it has hit a lot of folks that it hadn't before. And I'm definitely very happy about that.
What are your goals for GAD in the future?
You can never be perfectly accessible, same way you can never be perfectly usable. My shorter term goals are for all of the major frameworks and major projects. So when I say project, I mean, for example, Bootstrap is very popular and they've been pretty helpful when it came to GAD. But you take something like Magento, WordPress, which also has made lots of strides. Getting all of these major frameworks and projects to have an accessibility team internally so that their products are accessible. And by doing that, you will affect millions of people at a very early stage. So the big part of the push initially is to have those folks that are hitting millions of people and have them aware of accessibility. And then the second step is to have part of the curriculum and the vocabulary of the average developer. That's going to take a little bit longer, but I think the shorter term is achievable relatively soon.
If anyone who's listening to the program right now wants to get involved or wants to participate in other events that are going on today, what else is going on for Global Accessibility Awareness Day?
Oh my goodness, it's on every continent there's an event. There's over 40 events that we know of so far, and we're talking about Austin, Baltimore, Bangalore, India, Bellevue, Washington, Bologna, Switzerland, Boston, Brisbane. It's in the Netherlands, Scotland, Bangladesh, Wales, Sendai, Japan, Seoul, Korea. You know, locally there are tons and tons of events. But if you go to globalaccessibilityawarenessday.org, and I know it's a mouthful, we have a listing of events as well as virtual events. There's one that's particularly interesting, put on by the Paciello Group, where they're giving a one-hour webinar for 24 hours in a row. So if you go to the GAD hashtag, you will find it. Hashtag G-A-A-D. You will see plenty. And last year, we had about 2 tweets a minute for over 24 hours. So if you follow that hashtag, you see tons and tons of ways to participate.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for talking to me, Joe.
Thank you very much.
So, Allison, we had someone we talked to very special.
We did. We were able to talk to Ricardo Wagner, who is the Canadian Senior Product Marketing Manager for Microsoft 365.
We really hope that you enjoyed this interview as much as we had the opportunity to really enjoy talking to him. So enjoy.
Can you tell us who you are and a bit about yourself?
Of course. My name is Ricardo Wagner. I am the Microsoft Accessibility Lead. So I work for Microsoft Canada, and I help organizations to create modern, accessible, and inclusive workplaces, especially for persons with disabilities.
Okay, and what made you want to be a part of Microsoft and to focus on accessibility?
I'd say this is, at Microsoft, we believe disability is an engine of innovation. Mm-hmm. So at Microsoft, we welcome people from all different perspectives, background, skills, and ability. So we work hard to ensure that we create a diverse and inclusive workplace. Mm-hmm. And the reason we do this is because when we create a workforce with different perspectives where people can contribute from different point of view, mm-hmm. we innovate. We differentiate, we bring innovation to everyone we serve. And Microsoft operates in more than 190 countries. Combined, wow. We have more than 1.5 billion customers around the world. And to better reflect the citizens that we serve or the customers we serve, we need to have them reflected in our organization. So at Microsoft, we always look for ways to bring these talents to Microsoft. And of course, with our own expertise designing products that are accessible for everyone, we also help organizations, including public sector customers, commercial customers, education, schools, on their own journey to create inclusion for persons with disabilities.
And what made you want to be a part of that?
What made me? That's a good question. I love technology. I love help people.
Yeah.
And I believe technology can help in ways to create inclusion. And for me, it was an amazing intersection that happened in my life when I realized the social impact that I could drive by working for Microsoft, but at the same time, I realized Microsoft was working for me. So we have a good deal in place where together we are achieving goals of business goals, don't get me wrong, but at the same time driving social impact, which is something really cool that a lot of employees can experience at Microsoft.
Amazing.
Amazing. As the accessibility lead for Microsoft, what milestone or milestones have you achieved?
Well, let's see. So the very first point that I want to make is it's a journey. It's not like an end goal that say, hey, we are accessible. I think it's accessibility is a journey. We're going to always evolve, and we can always do better. Mm-hmm. And from this perspective, in a very humble way, we still have a lot of work to do. We still have a lot of work to do in terms of improve our experience, not just from an employee perspective, making our own workplace more inclusive for persons with disabilities, but also to reflect this in our products, in our services, in everything we do as a company. So it's been an interesting journey. I'd say we had a very special moment when our new CEO, Satya Nadella, took over in 2014. He's really close to this topic, and he also wrote in his book called Hit Refresh. He released this book, I think, one year ago. He mentioned his personal experience, he has three kids, two of them with disabilities, the oldest with cerebral palsy, and the youngest with learning disabilities. And in some, I think in one of the chapters, he also mentioned that he was traveling from Seattle, Redmond, to Vancouver. So one of the schools was specialized, and that's the school that he chose for his daughter. He was traveling to Vancouver quite often. Mm-hmm. All to say, he's really close to this topic around accessibility, and he understands the importance of designing products for everyone. Mm-hmm. And the side and positive effects that we all have, we have a concept we call accessibility for few becomes usability for many, and that's the game. When you design solutions that works for persons with disabilities, you ended up creating user experience and scenarios that you just have a way to delight your customers. Put it this way, and that's how Satya is bringing his perspective as part of the Microsoft engineering and the teams that are designing products to really be mindful in ways that we design and we approach technology to our customers. So we've made a lot of progress. We are now hiring more and more persons with disabilities. And by the way, we invite more people to apply to all opportunities we have in our website. As a program, we are not creating like specific roles, all roles. We are inviting persons with disabilities to participate and join the program. And of course, we have some other initiatives that are more specific, like the autism hiring program, which, by the way, we had events in Vancouver last month, and we are looking for talents with autism to work for Microsoft.
That sounds amazing. When it comes to accessibility, what are some Microsoft products that you can tell us that are totally accessible?
Yeah, since we built accessibility is built in, is by design.
Right.
So all the products that we create, we bring accessibility. Accessibility end up not being a product that we sell because the traditional Windows, Office 365, Microsoft Surface, Xbox, Microsoft Edge, learning tools, I can keep mentioning all the different products. All of them, they bring accessibility by design. But back to your questions, the ones that really excites me are solutions that we designed around using services called AI, artificial intelligence, services around translation and live captions. So today you can do a PowerPoint presentation using artificial intelligence services, and while you speak, you can get live captions in your presentation.
Wow.
But the interesting thing, you can pick and choose up to 72 different languages, and people can follow in 72 different languages your presentation at the same time. So this technology was designed for hard of hearing, but it ended up helping people speaking a different language, like me, or people in a noisy environment. Sometimes you make a presentation that is so hard to follow or to hear what the person is saying, but if you have closed captions, it can help. So that's a good example of designing a solution for someone with a permanent disability. It helps you to address untapped market opportunities, like helping foreign language speakers to communicate or helping someone in a noisy environment.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. How does the accessibility team obtain their sensitivity training? In other words, what workshops and quality control are in place to ensure devices and sensitivities are and services are appropriate?
Yes, that's a good question. So at Microsoft, we operate worldwide in all countries in the world, and some countries they have local legislation, policies around norms around persons with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
508 is a famous one in US. We know the European Union, they also have a one for Europe. We have an upcoming Canadian Disability Act, a federal one for regulated industries in Canada. They call BU81. These are requirements that companies and organizations that operate in these markets, they need to comply from a legislation perspective and ensure that the products and services that they build are designed and compliant from a local legislation perspective. And that's something that I'm really proud to say, that Microsoft complies to all key legislations from all different countries in the world. And we bring this solution to all different markets, not just from a legislation. And here's an interesting point.
Sure.
It's some organizations, they see accessibility as a legal requirement, as a conversation that they need to comply and check this scorecard list for the government to say, yeah, I'm doing everything that you are asking me to do. That's it, right? And very few companies are going beyond legislation, moving legislation to innovation, and understand that this conversation is not just about, or is not about checking the box for the government and say, yeah, I'm compliant. It's more about how I make this a strategic way to innovate and differentiate and delight my customers.
Mm-hmm.
How I make this conversation a way that I'm going to bring solutions to people that I'm not serving today, which, by the way, in Canada alone is 6.2 million people with disabilities.
Yeah,
6.2 million people.
Yeah.
In the world is 1.3 billion. Sometimes people reach out to me to say, yeah, this is a niche market. What? Niche market? Come on.
Yeah.
It's 6.2 million people, right?
Yeah.
So organizations that they are with this mindset of really understanding the opportunity and the opportunity ahead of them, they are really moving just from a legislation perspective to innovation.
So a part of your team in the accessibility, is it mostly people with disabilities that try these products and services?
We have persons with disabilities working in all parts of our organization.
Yeah.
And we are to increase the representation across all levels of our organization. So the team inside accessibility, we are proud to have a lot of people with disabilities, including visible and invisible. Very few people know, but 70% of disabilities are invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that people may not know, There are some studies, and one study from U.S. where they confirmed that 3 out of 10 employees in the workspace, they have a disability. So small things like color blindness, someone colorblind, which affects, there are more colorblind people in the world than English speakers.
Right.
So, wow. So sometimes people share a document like red, yellow, green, showing progress of a project or of imagine like sharing a scorecard with a status progress of, and put red, yellow, green. Someone colorblind may not see the difference. So that's why we advise to check accessibility before sharing a document. So in this way, you make content accessible. But back to your question is, we don't have like a specific roles or a quota for persons with disabilities. We invite persons with disabilities to work in any position inside Microsoft. So this representation, which we want to increase, by the way, it's across our organization.
Awesome. So a student in Asia developed a Braille watch for the blind. Does Microsoft have goals to create one like this too, as far as their newer and future products are concerned?
You mean a Braille display to connect with computer?
No, it's a watch. It's a watch for the blind.
Watch for the blind. That's good to know. Yeah, I don't have further details around the watch and in this specific project. But what I can tell you is, we've been working with accessibility technology, especially for people with sight loss, in Windows and Office 365 for a long time.
Right.
And what we have today, we have a set of technology that we use Braille as a way for people to interact with our technology. So Windows 10 Narrator supports Braille displays from all the top manufacturers in the world. And we leverage this communication or this language or this way to communicate for people to interact and experience Windows 10. And one of the interesting things that I love from this world is technology is not limited for people that can use a keyboard or a mouse or a keyboard with Braille as an example. There are so many more possibilities for us to connect and interact with technology. We can connect with our voice, with touch, with inking, even our eyes. So for those in the world of technology and accessibility is how we connect abilities to technology and in create the environment where everyone can communicate, express, and interact with this environment using the preferred or the available ability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we are experiencing in our platform, in our services. So Microsoft Surface, Windows 10, and Office 365, you can interact with the computer or the operational system or the productivity tools in the way you want. So a good example that I love to mention is what I call the Microsoft iGaze control. iGaze is a technology that requires you to connect with a camera. This camera is a USB camera.
Right.
It costs no more than $150 in Amazon, call it from Tobii Eye Control.
Mm-hmm.
And once you plug this camera, you just calibrate your screen. And once you finish, you can operate computer just using your eyes.
Oh, wow.
You move your eyes, you control the computer. And this is available by design. And we created this solution to help people with ALS. Mm-hmm. And right now, we have use case scenarios of doctors using this technology at the hospital. Why? Because they don't need to take out their gloves, wash their hands, and go to a computer.
Right.
They can just use this technology and have a computer close by, and with their eyes perform what they need to do and move to what they need to do. So it's helped them to be more productive and avoid contamination. See, the side effect and a good example of inclusive design, it was designed for ALS, but it's empowered doctors at the hospital.
Wow.
How do you keep up to date with the hearing aid industry?
Hearing aid. So we have, I would not be like the right person to tell about partnerships or existing partnerships and ongoing projects in this space. But I can tell you, we've been working really close to expert communities in companies in the Microsoft ecosystem that
is
helping
us. That's what we needed to know. That's what the question is referring to. Yeah. Is that, where do you get your information from?
Yes, so we have from our own ecosystem. So Microsoft, we have a dedicated research team, a lab we call Enable Lab, or the Human-Centric Design Lab at Microsoft. We have operations in Redmond, close to Vancouver, as well in Europe. And this is the team that is behind the scenes researching, working with partnership with universities and other institutions to bring to life new technology and technology that will help everyone, including persons with disabilities. The good intersection or the beautiful intersection that is happening in the market today is with the advancement of artificial intelligence in machine learning, quantum computing. We are seeing like an amazing intersection of many different technologies coming to life, and this intersection helping us to design and achieve certain features, technologies, or functionalities that we were not able to experience before. So the example that I mentioned previously from live captions, today it's possible for you to have live captions in a conference call using Microsoft Teams, or doing a PowerPoint presentation with live captions. You use the Microsoft Translator service. This project was inspired working with people hard of hearing in ecosystem around hearing aids that ended up helping everyone, including foreign language speakers.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah. In your line of work, what are some challenges you encounter as far as accessibility is concerned and being a part of a big corporation like Microsoft?
There are many.
Yeah.
There are many. Many challenges. I think it's the first thing is around perception. It's, mm-hmm. I think it's I'll be really open to you. Like what I learned working with persons with disabilities is many persons with disabilities they need to go to so many challenges during their day, during their life. We don't live in a world that is inclusive, right?
Right.
We live in a world that was designed with stairs, and not realizing that there are many people with living in a wheelchair using a wheelchair. I feel that the challenge is to deal with perception around persons with disabilities. There is a side of the population in especially organizations that they see persons with disabilities as talents and people that can make amazing contribution, and some organizations that they don't see in the same way.
Right.
And they don't see in the same way due perception, due lack of awareness, or just because they were not exposed or had a chance to experience, to either study, to live, or to work with persons with disabilities. And once they have this chance and they start to understand the talent pool that we have in this market, which, by the way, the unemployment rate for persons with disabilities is 2 times higher compared to persons without disabilities,
they start to
realize the opportunity around this conversation and the benefits that we can all have if we build a diverse workforce. Personally, I can tell my experience work with people with sight loss. When we have meetings, I'm doing this quite often.
Right.
I don't bring PowerPoint presentation or visuals. I'm prepared to take everybody through my content without visuals.
Right.
And why I do this, although I can send content in advance and everyone can consume, including people with sight loss, and make my presentation or my meeting more inclusive, working with people with sight loss, I learn how to be prepared to talk about what I want to say without visuals.
Right.
So I learn a skill, a competence that I can use everywhere. And that's something I learned working with them. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting how you learn. I think it's the side effect that people may not realize is working with persons with disabilities, how you end up helping your entire organization to learn how to work differently,
right,
in a more meaningful, more strategic, more productive way.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a physical disability, and visually, like, I can't show anyone how to support me. So I have to communicate as best as I can. And it goes a long way. But that's a very good point that you make, because not everybody can communicate or show visuals.
Exactly. And let's agree, there are so many ways for us to communicate and make our point, right?
Exactly.
When you learn how to present and how to approach in different ways, it's good for you. It's good for everyone. You make inclusive meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. Can you give us any hints as to what Microsoft is doing on as far as advanced technology goes?
I can spend a lot of time with you talking about what we're doing. I think the core and most important thing that I want to leave to you is we don't design products and solutions for persons with disabilities. Everything we do, we are inspired and we work to make it work for persons with disabilities. And this is the concept we call inclusive design. Inclusive design, we have three principles. The very first principle we have for inclusive design is recognize exclusion. And recognize exclusion, it's an exercise that we all need to go through. We tend to address or create things based on our own bias. And exclusion happens when we solve problems using our own bias. Sometimes we have the best intention, but we don't have the full picture. So we work when we design products to recognize exclusion in everything we do inside Microsoft. Through this process, we go to the second principle of inclusive design. We learn from diversity. Human beings are the real experts in adapting to diversity. And the more we bring to the fabric, the more we bring people with different and diverse set of expertise to work for Microsoft, they help us to build not just a diverse workforce, but a diverse company, but they help us to create solutions that comes with come not with one single perspective or bias. We get perspective from many different people when we build solutions, and it tends to work for more people. And the third principle we apply, once we make it work for one, we extend to many. So by focusing on what is universally important to all humans, we make it work for everyone. So back to your point, everything that we are designing today, from a gaming, from a Windows 10 operational system, or from a technology in productivity with Microsoft Teams, Microsoft 365, Microsoft Edge, learning tools. I can keep naming all the different apps we have. We apply inclusive design principles, and we are taking the benefit of AI technology to bring to life all these amazing new features that is helping us to empower everyone in the world.
That's amazing. So I guess this is my favorite question, but what are some future goals for the Microsoft Accessibility Department?
I think it's a journey again.
Yeah.
It's not going to be something that you can set as a milestone and you're going to say, okay, here we are. We are accessible, and people start to celebrate. I think it's an ongoing. It's going to be a life work, put in this way, to make products accessible, to make solutions accessible for everyone. The way we see accessibility is not just from a product and solution or what we offer to customers and to our society. Internally, we see accessibility in many different ways. We work close to our product development and our engineers, so to ensure that when they build, when they design, they are mindful around inclusive design principles. We work close to procurement to ensure that the companies that we work, they also understand the value of diversity, and we do policies and practices to ensure that our suppliers and our ecosystem, they also operate in the same standards. We work close to our internal organization with HR, ensuring that our local HR, they adopt best practices and they ensure that they include everyone, called this inclusive hiring process. We do work with support. So we have a support called EDAD, Disability Answer Desk. So persons with disabilities, they have many different channels and ways to get support from Microsoft. And we assist in different languages, in sign language, with Be My Eyes. We have so many ways for persons with disabilities to connect and interact with Microsoft from a support perspective. And also, we end up with initiatives around sales and marketing. One thing is doing this great job, which I feel proud that our company and many people that I represent inside Microsoft we are doing. But we are working hard to bring this to life by letting customers know what they don't know about all the existing accessibility technology available by design today in their computers, phones in some cases, and we are working really close to marketing and sales to bring this to life in messages. I don't know if you saw, we promoted a Super Bowl ad this year, showcasing the Xbox Adaptive Controller. I recommend you to take a look. This is like an awesome ad where we featured the new Xbox Adaptive Controller, especially designed for kids with disabilities. And the call to action for the campaign was when everybody plays, we all win.
Last but not least, is there anything you would like to say to our listeners in Vancouver and across Canada?
Yes, I do want. Feel proud to be Canadian. This is a country that is doing good work in this space, and we know that still a lot of work to be done. But the country and from a society perspective is really bringing this conversation to life. I'm excited with the upcoming BU81 from the federal government that is going to take place anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
It will help the lives of many Canadians with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And to learn more, I would love to invite everyone listening this interview today to visit the Microsoft website. Microsoft Accessibility, you can either Bing or use Google, type Microsoft Accessibility. You're going to find all the content, everything I mentioned that we have, all the technology and features we have by design in our products. If you want to keep this conversation going, we have a Twitter account, MSFT Enable on Twitter, and so many other channels that we can promote and keep you up to date with the latest and greatest.
Wow. That's incredible.
That's amazing.
Yeah. thank you so much, Ricardo.
Thank you, Ricardo.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah. And I'm here to help. If you need anything in the future, just let me know.
Thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time again. We learned a lot, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So awesome. And hopefully we'll be able to meet with you in person.
Anytime.